college football faces a coronavirus reckoning.
Whether or not there's a regular season will come down to the five men that are in charge of the five biggest conferences.
Meanwhile, some college students are already back on campus, and life is strange.
It is certainly not the feel of normal college life.
Plus, parental leave for pet owners? It's Monday, August 10th. I'm Shelby Holliday for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. Lebanese Prime Minister Hassan Diab and his cabinet have resigned under growing pressure from protesters over the deadly explosion that devastated large parts of central Beirut last week. The resignations are likely to trigger more political instability in the country, which had already been suffering from an economic crisis prior to the coronavirus outbreak. China says it's imposing sanctions on 11 U.S. citizens, including Republican Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, as well as other lawmakers who have been pushing for a hard stance toward Beijing. The move came in retaliation for similar measures by Washington against officials from Hong Kong and mainland China on Friday. And McDonald's is suing former CEO Steve Easterbrook, seeking to claw back tens of millions of dollars it paid him in severance and benefits when he was dismissed last fall. Easterbrook was ousted after admitting to a consensual relationship with an employee, which was against company policy. But now, as our reporter Heather Haddon reports, the fast food giant is alleging that Easterbrook lied about additional sexual relationships with other employees.
This seems to be a highly unusual move in general among corporations. So clawbacks are not unusual when it comes to financial malfeasance, so say some kind of misreporting of financial information, but they say that this reporting involving actual CEO lying to the company is quite unusual, according to those I've spoken to. So some boards may, in the past, maybe have just tried to bury this or move on or just let the CEO go. But as you can maybe tell from the complaint, they're clearly angered by this behavior and want to make an issue out of it.
Easterbrook didn't respond to requests for comment. Coming up after the break, what this fall is shaping up to look like for college students and college football fans. We've been talking about how schools are balancing back to school with coronavirus concerns. Some colleges and universities are going to keep up with online learning in the fall. But hundreds of thousands of college students are preparing to return to campus in the coming weeks. Today marked the first day of classes for students at the University of Notre Dame. And our higher education reporter Melissa Korn joins me now to talk about their new normal. Melissa, with Notre Dame offering us an early preview, what does life on college campuses look like right now?
It looks not like normal college life. You've got plenty of students around campuses for the schools that have opened, but you have all of these students, faculty and staff are wearing masks. They are spread out a lot more on quads or in green spaces. They are not filling the dining halls. A lot of them are doing grab and go meals. So you'll get some food and you'll go sit outside or sit under a tent to eat. Even orientation looks different. Rather than have everybody come back at once and you have some big group activity, you've got a lot of small group activities. The club fair is broken up into lots of little groups. They're getting creative with events like an outdoor scavenger hunt or movie night in a much larger area so that students can spread out. It is certainly not the feel of normal college life.
How are schools like Notre Dame preparing for thousands of students to be on campus in one area in these unprecedented times?
Yeah, the schools are doing, they've been planning this really since they shut down. They're figuring how to reopen. And many schools have decided, we just can't right now. We feel like maybe it's not safe enough either on campus or in our surrounding area. Cases are ticking up, things like that. But the schools that have said, yes, we're going to go through with this, it's everything from buying thousands of gallons of hand sanitizer and placing stations around school, putting up plexiglass in the bursar's office or financial aid office so that there's a little bit less kind of physical close contact exposure, setting up classrooms and marking off, you can't sit in this seat, you can sit in this seat because that gives you more space between people. Notre Dame is having assigned seats in a lot of their classes so that They can do contact tracing. If somebody does fall ill, then they know that the people in kind of that immediate orbit around them need to be contacted. It's so much planning is involved in this. And then at the end of the day, it's still also a lot of trust, right? You can put all the protocols in place, have thousands of signs saying 6 feet, you know, to remind people to socially distance and wear masks and all that. But at the end of the day, if people don't follow the rules, they're not going to follow the rules.
And are students still staying in dorm rooms with roommates?
Yeah. So at Notre Dame, I spoke to a number of first year students and they have roommates or they're living in suites of four and they're considered kind of a family unit. So if one of them falls ill, the other one would need to be quarantined. They're kind of, you know, they don't have to wear a mask in their immediate room with their roommate, but they are expected to mask up if they're in the hallway, if they're in common areas, going out to the bathroom, things like that. And they're not allowing anybody else into those dorm rooms. Unless you're the person who lives in that room, you shouldn't be in there. You know, in the hope of kind of keeping the distance as much as possible. But there's some awkward conversations that these students would need to have with their roommates and saying, you know, hey, not only do I expect you to not be a total slob and, you know, not be too loud at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to sleep, but also can you please not conduct risky behavior and expose yourself and therefore me to COVID-19?
Right. The roommate situation is already so awkward. I'm sure this just adds a whole nother layer of it. Tell us about coronavirus testing and contact tracing. What's the plan at Notre Dame, and how is that comparing to other schools that you've been talking to?
Yeah, Notre Dame had all students get tested. They had to have a test within 7 days before returning to campus. So they called it pre-matriculation testing. And then they came to campus and students, again, expected to wear masks and socially distance and things like that. A lot of other colleges took a slightly different approach where they required testing ahead of time. But then also once students got on campus are doing mass testing of asymptomatic individuals. And that it's kind of an issue in itself because it potentially puts a strain on the testing system when you've got tens of thousands more tests now being required. So those first few weeks on campus are just so different from what normally you expect because of either the quarantine or the testing or the masks or the changing schedules and events and activities that you can and can't participate in.
That was our reporter, Melissa Korn. Of course, one of the things Notre Dame is famous for is its football team. It's obviously a huge moneymaker for them and for many other colleges. Notre Dame's team has been holding voluntary workouts, but whether the Fighting Irish or any other team will play this season is still an open question. Right now, all eyes are on the Power Five conferences, particularly the Big Ten, since the heads of those schools are planning to meet tonight. Our sports reporter Lane Higgins joins me to discuss. So, Lane, first, why is the Big Ten so influential?
The Big Ten is the richest conference in college sports. They have had the biggest television deal for several years, and they have the most money at their disposal. And, you know, because of that, these athletic departments have budgets oftentimes upwards of $200 million a year. So there's a lot of money at stake. Additionally, the Big Ten Conference's commissioner, Kevin Warren, just came on board in early January. So he's had a crazy time to take over a new league. But because of that, he's probably a little bit more cautious than some of his longer tenured colleagues in other conferences. And additionally, the Big Ten has been pretty fast in moving on other aspects of coronavirus. They were one of the first conferences to cancel their basketball tournament all the way back in March. They have been slower than some of the others to bring students back for voluntary workouts, and they were the first conference to announce that they were only going to play non-conference games in early July.
So this Big Ten meeting tonight is a big deal, but it also comes after a weekend of meetings and other developments. Fill us in on what happened.
Yeah, so it all started around 9 a.m. on Saturday when the Mid-American Conference, which is relatively small, but it is in the top tier of Division I football, they said that they're not going to have fall sports and they're going to try to field competition in the spring, which is still a pretty big question mark. And then over the course of the day, there was a lot of players from all across the country, some from Ohio State, you know, Clemson star quarterback Trevor Lawrence, all tweeting, you know, we want to play, we want to have a season. And Then as Saturday night turned into Sunday, there was a few more players that were organizing, and there was a meeting between all of the commissioners of the Power Five conferences. So that's Atlantic Coast, Big 12, Big 10, SEC, Pac-12. And there was no decision that was made there, but they were just trying to get all on the same page. And it complicates a little bit of the dynamic of how you make a decision, because they want to include the players' voices, but the players also really have no power to have their voices heard. So it's just more of a optics issue for the whole sport to figure out. So it's going to be an interesting week. Let's put it at that.
Right. So the players want to play and they have social media and they do have a voice, but who will ultimately call the shots here?
Well, in the top tier of Division One, which is, you know, the biggest schools, that's going to be the commissioners, because the NCAA doesn't actually control the championship for, you know, the Alabamas and Ohio States of the world. Whether or not there's a regular season will come down to the five men that are in charge of the five biggest conferences. And whatever they do, because that's where the most money is at stake, that's probably going to be whatever the group of five is, what they're called, the other conferences in the top tier of Division One do. In the bottom tier of Division One, the football championship subdivision, they've already said the championship is happening in the spring and most teams are playing in the spring. So yeah, it's going to be interesting because Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, can't really have any say on what happens to college football.
So this might sound like a weird question, but the players want to play. There's a lot of money at stake. It sounds like students would love to watch their teams play even if they're not back on campus. Why would they not play? What are the considerations?
Yeah. So over the weekend, there was, I think, a study that came out that kind of confirmed that there's a lot of longstanding cardiac health complications that can come with contracting coronavirus. And also over the course of the summer, there's been some college football athletes that have experienced more dramatic symptoms. So, you know, extreme weight loss, they've been hospitalized, you know, having heart conditions. And I think that was starting to sink in, and that there is actually a fair amount of risk. They're not just young, healthy people that are going to get a bad cold. And on top of that, one of the reasons why it might not be prudent for college athletes to play is an optics issue, because before all of this coronavirus stuff was in the lexicon, there was this push for reform around name, image, and likeness that essentially allows colleges to have athletes that earn sponsorship money just for themselves. And the problem with having athletes maybe playing on campus when the rest of the students aren't is that they look an awful lot like employees. And that makes it really hard for the NCAA to justify its whole model of amateurism, especially if these athletes are now also signing sponsorships. So it's this further erosion of what the NCAA claims is the basis for not paying athletes.
Wow, there are a lot of fascinating issues at play.
Yeah, college sports is going to look a lot different whenever it comes back. There's so much going on right now. And I think I, as much as anyone, want to see college football, but I am not holding my breath.
That was our sports reporter, Lane Higgins. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
And finally, pet adoptions have been on the rise during quarantine. And some companies are now offering benefits for new pet parents, from adoption stipends to paternity leave. Yes, that's time off to care for your new furry friend. When workers were in the office, some companies offered dog walking services or play areas. But now that most people are working from home, companies have had to get more creative, like offering doggy Zoom calls so the pups can see one another. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Shelby Holliday for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.